From the National Press Club in Washington, D.C., this is Update One, the club's official podcast. It features newsworthy stories originating from the NPC facilities, as well as broader topics related to journalism, communications, press freedom, and transparency.
I'm Tom Young with the Broadcast Podcast Committee of the National Press Club. A recent social media announcement from the Pentagon said the Defense Department would take control of the content for Stars and Stripes, a newspaper for the U.S. military community. That's despite a congressional mandate that the newspaper remain independent. Stars and Stripes has asked its readers and supporters to help protect its editorial independence. With me in the studio is Stars and Stripes Editor-in-Chief Eric Slavin, and Ombudsman Jacqueline Smith joins us by phone from her home in Connecticut. I'll start with a question for Jackie. What are you asking supporters to do?
I am asking them to speak up and to convey what Stars and Stripes means to them. And a way to do this is by writing to their U.S. senators and representatives. If they are veterans or active duty or family members, to tell of the value and relevance of Stripes to their lives. And but also for all readers to explain how the newspaper's credibility is rooted in its balance, fairness, and independence. Stripes is for the military, not by the military.
I see. And I understand that members of the House and Senate Armed Services Committees are already getting involved. And by the time listeners hear this, things may have changed. But what have Congress members done so far?
Notably, on January 16th, and that was the day after the post on X by Sean Parnell. So on January 16th, 10 senators wrote a letter to Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth asking questions about the, quote, refocus, close quote, for Stripes, announced by Mr. Parnell on social media the day before, as I mentioned. And also they were asserting the needed independence of Stars and Stripes. I'm sure that other congressional members are asking questions behind the scenes. I can say that many value the editorial independence of Stripes and want it to continue.
According to the Daily Wire, the Pentagon says active duty service members will write all content for Stars and Stripes. So, Eric, I'll ask you a question that leaped to my mind as soon as I heard the story. If the Code of Federal Regulations specifically says Stars and Stripes will be editorially independent of the military chain of command, is this even legal? What's the status of that regulation and who can change that?
Well, the regulation was announced to be rescinded the same day of the social media post, which was a surprise, as was all of this to us in the newsroom. The regulation was actually up for modernization last year and received about 88 comments, the vast majority of which were not only supportive of the mission of Stars and Stripes, they were looking for an expansion of that mission. They were looking, some people remarked that, for example, Stars and Stripes has had its FOIAs rejected by the Defense Department due to its status as a federal agency. And a lot of those comments ran along the lines of, well, practically the entire world can FOIA, why can't Stars and Stripes? So to see that regulation rescinded was a big surprise and leads to even more questions as to what our status will be within the Defense Department. And we'd like to have that conversation with the Defense Department.
So maybe this question can't be entirely answered right now, but are civilian jobs at Stars and Stripes at risk currently?
All we're going on at this point is that tweet and the Daily Wire story citing an anonymous source, and we don't know who that source is or where that came from. At this point, we have not yet heard from the Pentagon directly. So it's very difficult for us to say whether that story is entirely accurate or what the status is of our civilian jobs.
I see. Tell us a little more about how Stars and Stripes has normally operated. Who writes most of its content now?
The vast majority of the content is written by civilian journalists, seasoned civilian journalists who have worked at other news organizations. Sometimes we may hire somebody directly out of college, but for the most part, these are people who worked elsewhere prior to joining Stars and Stripes. Many of the journalists are experts in their field. We have somebody who's been covering NATO for decades. the journalists that are civilians will work with military journalists who function somewhat as interns. They come to us for 1 to 3 year assignments, but they are not taught journalism by the military. They are taught public affairs, public relations. So there is quite a learning curve associated with that.
And this isn't the first time Stars and Stripes has faced an effort to censor or even silence it. What happened during President Trump's first term?
So Undersecretary Esper, there was a push to zero fund Stars and Stripes. And when it was asked during a press conference why, their response was that Stars and Stripes wasn't reflecting their messaging priorities, which is not the point of Stars and Stripes. It does not exist to be the official mouthpiece of the Pentagon. And that received a lot of pushback, bipartisan pushback, I would add, in the Senate, in the House. And eventually, the president tweeted that Stars and Stripes would remain.
Jackie, in your article asking for action by readers, you called Stars and Stripes a legendary newspaper, and I think that's a fair statement. Tell us about the history of Stars and Stripes.
Yeah, the history is pretty interesting. Stars and Stripes' origins go back to the Civil War in 1861. After 10 soldiers from Illinois who had printing backgrounds took over the deserted offices of a local newspaper. This is in Bloomfield, Missouri. And they published a one-page sheet. And today, Stars and Stripes has a... There's a Stars and Stripes National Museum and Library in Bloomfield, which commemorates that initiative. An interesting place to visit, by the way. In World War I, General John Pershing, a Missouri native, reactivated Stars and Stripes in France. Here's a quote. He said, "I do not believe that any one factor could have done more to sustain the morale of the American Expeditionary Force than the Stars and Stripes," Pershing later said. After the war, the paper went dormant. World War II, and then General Dwight D. Eisenhower brought it back. And Stars and Stripes has not stopped publishing since then. In fact, just in the fall, it observed its 80th anniversary of publishing in the Pacific for the military community. Back to Eisenhower, he knew the value for the troops of an independent press. And General Patton had a complaint by a cartoon by Bill Malden, actually. Eisenhower stood up for the paper. He said, quote, "The Stars and Stripes is the soldier's paper and must be kept free of censorship or propaganda. Its purpose is to tell the truth, good or bad, to the men and women who serve." I told Patton, "We won't interfere the earth." So during those wartime years, some names you might recognize worked on Stripes. Grantland Rice, Harold Ross, Andy Rooney, and of course, Bill Malden, who won a Pulitzer Prize for one of his Willie and Joe cartoons.
How is Stars and Stripes funded? It's not all Defense Department money, is it?
Right, yeah. A portion of the operating budget comes from the Defense Department, a separate line under the Defense Media Activity Area. And the percentage shifts year to year, but generally has been around 35 to 45%. The remainder of the funding is raised through areas such as advertising. Stripes produces 300 or so special publications every year. Some are monthly, some are annual. They're glossy magazine-like publications focused on geographic areas and topics, all for service people, such as, okay, welcome to Bahrain, or how to transition to your civilian life, guides for education and medical services for where the troops are stationed. So that's how Stripes gets its funds.
Some people might ask, why does it matter if editorial decisions at Stars and Stripes are made independently? But Eric, I believe you've pointed out some recent stories covered by the newspaper that might not have been reported without the free hand of independents. Can you tell us about some of those?
There are any number of stories that we print that lead to us holding officials accountable. And boy, you know, it would take a long time to go through all of them. But, you know, there's one example that I've used involving Dee Spearman, a sailor who was aboard the USS Arleigh Burke. And when he died after falling off of the ship in the Baltic Sea, there was a very short press release put out. Our reporter stuck with it for about 2 years. initially denied the documentation from the Navy, but eventually it came, speaking with family members, speaking with sailors, and found that this particular sailor had fainted four times aboard the ship, including twice while at the helm. And he was told to go work at the very top of the ship alone with an absence of regulation lifelines, among other things. I don't think that kind of reporting is going to be done if the Defense Department is mandating what would be written and what wouldn't be.
I see. I can't help but contrast Stars and Stripes with the old Soviet military newspaper Red Star. That was purely propaganda. And during my own time in the military, I can recall picking up Stars and Stripes during deployments. And I remember thinking, if my chain of command gives me an independent newspaper, that tells me they trust a free press and I'm on the right side. Jackie, would you like to address the difference between independent journalism and propaganda? Or if propaganda is too strong a word, let's say the difference between journalism and public relations.
Sure. Independent journalism should be objective, balanced, fair, and of course, accurate. And Stripes is scrupulous about meeting that criteria as outlined in its mission and core value statements. Public relations is one-sided, one point of view, and is generally intended to make the subject look good. By its nature, it is not objective. And this is why I'm very concerned with the stated intent by unnamed officials to have 50% of Stripes content composed by the, quote, War Department. How would readers know the difference between what is filtered from the Pentagon and what is objective reporting? Credibility and trust would be lost.
The planned changes for Stars and Stripes were first announced, as we've discussed, announced by the Pentagon on social media in January. A post on X said the move would eliminate so-called woke distractions. What's a woke distraction?
I would like to know.
Me too. I mean, in the context of what you read in Stars and Stripes, I have no idea. In my 2 years as ombudsman, reading the news closely every day, I do not see any so-called woke distractions, and I've heard no complaints. Did you, Eric?
Not along those lines. No, it's, again, we would like to have that conversation to better understand what they're referring to, but at this point, we still have yet to hear from the Pentagon since that tweet.
Reports have said applicants to work at Stars and Stripes are being asked how they would support Trump's priorities. So I'll ask this question for Eric. Is this a loyalty test? And if it is, how does that square with journalistic ethics?
Those questions, first off, we were unaware that they were being asked these questions. We don't see that on our side when we enter the request to advertise for a job. They were being asked of all federal employees, and we are required to go through the USA Jobs portal, and that's why they were being asked that question. We do not, when we are having job interviews, talk about anything along the lines of who supports what policy. We ask about things like, you know, can you function under pressure, or talk about your deadline reporting, your enterprise reporting, you know, the normal things that you would hear from a journalist. But I can certainly see how that would have a chilling effect if someone were being asked those questions, though it is our understanding that answering those questions were optional, and that is not the criteria we would use to choose people when that list comes to us. But I see the optics of that, and it's problematic, and it's something that we would have a conversation with about removing.
Yes, yes. Jackie, your recent article said all this fits within a wider scheme of Pentagon restrictions on the media. Can you tell us more about that?
Yes, it goes back to at least last spring when Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth issued a memo, May 23rd, which substantially limited where the press could go within the Pentagon. In the fall, September, new regulations were issued to the press, and journalists were required to sign a 21-page agreement or lose their Pentagon press credentials. The agreement included such stipulations and acceptable ones as to publish only material approved by the Pentagon. I mean, that alone was clear infringement on the First Amendment. In October, dozens of journalists from mainstream papers walked out. The New York Times has since sued. And the development with tribes earlier this month is within this environment of attempting to restrict and control the news, I believe.
Well, we will stand by to learn more about the future of Stars and Stripes. We've been talking with Stars and Stripes Editor-in-Chief Eric Slavin and Ombudsman Jacqueline Smith. Eric and Jackie, many thanks for your time and your insights. I'm Tom Young, reporting for Update One from the National Press Club in Washington.
You have been listening to Update One, the official podcast of the National Press Club, the world's leading professional organization for journalists and a vigorous advocate of press freedom worldwide. If you have any questions or comments about Update One, send an email to updateonepodcast@gmail.com.